Hey, folks, sit back, relax, get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. The Geocaching Podcast is coming at you right about now.
You want to know how to find it, seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 526, recorded live on February 21st, 2018. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with
Scott Burks,
Task 427, and
Info Fabric.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. Also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our PayPal, our Patreon or PayPal logo on our website to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Wow, lots of stuff going on this week in the East Coast and the Northeast Coast, depending on where you're at and how much snow you want to get. It is bipolar.
The Midwest didn't get any snow? Is that what you're telling
me? The Southwest did not, or Southeast did not. Nothing.
Sure did.
Huh?
I sure did.
Did you get some snow? How much you get?
Yeah, about a foot, a little over a foot.
Really? A foot?
Awesome.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
It's been in the 50s and raining for the past 2 days. It's all gone.
Yeah.
No snow, but we actually managed to get down in the 20s.
Ooh.
28 degrees 2 days straight for the morning lows.
Wow. Yeah, we were actually, it's been bipolar here in North Kakalaki. It would be in the 40s one day. It was 80 today. So it's just been going up and down. So, of course, everybody's getting sick, which is great. But at least the daffodils are actually officially up now, so the tulips are next.
Mm. Oh, well, we haven't had any snow.
No.
We had a fair bit of wind and rain, thanks to ex-tropical cyclone Geeta that hammered us over the last couple of days. Wellington seemed to... Well, we seemed to dodge a bullet, because the sea came and trashed some of the coastal roads further north of us, and hammered the top end of the South Island with big landslips and flooding and roads, a couple of roads closed that'll take a few weeks at least to open. But
wow.
No, Wellington got off very, very lightly, for which I am very, very grateful.
It always sounds like
a beautiful day today.
Every time you get a cyclone coming through there, I just imagine how much the islands just get sheared off in pure erosion. It's like in another couple of years, there's going to be two strips of land, and that'll be it, because all the landslides you guys get.
And that was a baby. That was effectively a category one hurricane.
Ah.
Wow.
Barely a tropical storm. Barely more than a tropical storm.
Hell, they won't even go for bread and milk here for that.
Oh, well, you lot are hard. Well, they've had to get the army's been in a couple of places.
Nice.
Out in a couple of places. They were taking Unimogs to get people out of one or two places. There's been huge landslips.
Wait, Unimog?
Yeah, military vehicle.
It's a Unimog?
Is that like a Hummer here?
I never heard of that before. Did I hear that correctly? Unimog?
Yeah, I'll just Google it and tell you.
Never heard of that before.
Huh?
It's a Unimog.
Wow.
You know what a Unimog is?
It's some New Zealand term for
a range of multi-purpose all-wheel drive medium trucks produced by Daimler and sold under the brand name Mercedes-Benz in the United States.
It's a Hummer.
Wait, I could buy it in the States? I could buy a Unimog?
Looking at the pictures, I don't think they have those over here.
I could drive a Humvee around.
I can't drive a Unimog around.
Steering wheel's on the wrong side.
Right. No, the steering wheel's on the right side. It's you guys that are on the wrong side.
See, here we go.
Let me ask you a picture of this Unimog.
Yeah.
Does it look like a Humvee, Taz? What does it look like?
It doesn't really look much like a Humvee. It looks like a strange military vehicle. Really?
Wow.
I've never heard of that.
So...
A Unimog. Okay. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. Well, we'll investigate some more. I'm sure our European friends will tell us more about it. Unless it's a Kiwi thing where they just happen to have it's a thing that, you know, they had to get rid of, kind of like an off sale for cars, and they gave them to New Zealand.
I'm not going to make any comments about the military budget.
Oh, part of the fun. But yeah, the weather's been nuts, and I'm very surprised with the highs and the lows, and that we haven't had our tornado season kick off yet, because it's been very, very crazy. I think the spring's going to be pretty wild. Hmm. How about you guys? Scott, what you been up to besides a foot of snow?
Well, we got a foot of snow, so Jesse and I went out Saturday night. We went caching.
All right.
Excuse me. I've had a cough for like 10 weeks now.
Mm.
And we did good. I think we got about 10 or 12. It was a pain because it's snow. It was a lot of snow. But it was fun. And then, of course, now it's all gone because it's been in the 50s 2 days in a row and raining for 48 hours straight. So it's like...
floods.
All the snow's melted, so now everything's flooding. But I guess it could be worse. It could have been snowing for 48 hours straight. So
yeah, no kidding.
And it's been beautiful. The other day it was like 62 degrees outside. It was beautiful. Was it for February in Chicago? Go figure.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah.
Right now, you guys should be chipping down to the level of where the cars are.
It's all myth. Don't believe it.
Cool. Taz, how was yourself, man?
Oh, well, we had some pretty good weather for 2 weeks straight, but I was riding the viral roller coaster.
Oh.
And so I didn't make it outdoors very much. And now all the... The viral roller coaster is like get off one virus and then hit another and then hit another.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
You need to change up, Chad. I'm just saying.
That's what happens when you have kids.
I think I'm over it. Yeah, I hope I'm over it.
So bad he froze up.
Powered, and now it's freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah, bipolar's the way.
I want to feel bad for you, but I don't.
Yeah, crazy stuff. And then Sarah dodging cyclones.
Oh, yeah, that was... Let's say we were lucky. It went north of us, it went south of us. But it was wet. It poured down, but it was not too bad.
I'm just in that mood tonight.
A couple of weeks ago... Not weekend just gone, weekend before, a group of us went up to find a couple of caches that are more or less in the middle of nowhere, along a ridge. But it was, they lived up to their T4 rating in that said you start off on a forest track and that's fine. Then you go on to what they called an indistinct track. There is a track here with a vivid imagination.
Ah.
And there was gorse and cutty grass. Now, gorse is a sort of spiky bush that goes through sticks through everything. And cutty grass is sort of like...
Give that to.
Almost like a narrow, grassy bead, but its edges are really sharp, and they will cut your fingers if you grab hold of it.
Oh, really?
And that stuff was higher than my head. I mean, I know I'm not exactly tall, but that was...
We don't know how tall are you. I have no idea.
Yeah, to me, you're like your average 4 inches tall.
No, 5'1" and 5'8".
Oh, you are short.
Okay. Yeah, short. Okay, no, that's all right.
So, I don't care.
So if you trip in the stuff, can it take out a juggler?
I think you'd have to be pretty unlucky to do that. Think of the paper cut.
Thousand ways to die.
Right there in the field.
Yeah, well, anyway, we got up there, found the caches, we came back. We may or may not have left a couple of caches on the way up, but I've got a which we may or may not have written up yet. And most of the rest of the time I've been... There's another puzzle that's come out in Wellington where there's a load of... The Wellington Council apprentices each do a small garden and they put up displays about them. So I've been going wandering around trying to find information for those to find the answer to a puzzle case that's very helpfully been put out.
Very nice.
Fascinating, but... There's an error in my calculations somewhere, and I've got to work back through it and work out where on earth am I out on this.
Wow. Well, that sounds like fun, though.
Well, that's fun.
Good stuff.
Half a ton of Aussie puzzles.
Oh, yeah. Well, talk to Chad. He may have worked on a puzzle or two over the past several months.
One or two.
Well, if that Oy Vey one's still up for grabs, somebody's got it, but I'm focusing on ones the other side of the Tasman at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, good stuff.
With help.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. All right, so moving on, please consider becoming a patron of our show. We would greatly appreciate it. All you have to do is go to geocachingpodcast.com and click on either our PayPal or our Patreon logo. And if you can donate a few bucks to us each month, we'd greatly appreciate it. It helps pay for the hosting and all the other things that deal with podcasting and helps keep the lights on. So we really do appreciate it. And for the folks that are doing it, thank you so much. It is. It's greatly, gratefully thank you for that. Let's move on to Scott. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
We got the GCPC mailbag. Here we go.
I got mail. Yay! I got mail. Yay!
This one comes from Stephen W54. Stephen? He says, hello, gang. This message is for Scott. That's me. Scott, you recently told the story about a police officer pointing a gun at you when you were geocaching in an area known to be frequented by drug dealers. Yes, that's the house in Chicago years ago. Some web sleuthing revealed that you were on an episode 504 of Podcacher. Yes, it was about 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
During that show, you briefly said that one time several police officers swarmed your car, and another time police asked you to leave the state of Wisconsin. What did you do to stir up some commotion? Haven't I told those stories before?
I think it's starting to be legend.
Well, let me finish this off and I'll tell the story. My own Leo encounter occurred while I was looking for a geocache that was too close to a parks a play area for small children. Okay. One of the police officers showed up, knew about geocaching, and a nano is cause for concern. I was allowed to put the cache back, but I was told to leave the park. That cache was archived, and I later recalled that incident when I found another cache in a different part of the same park. Oh, he recalled the incident when he found another cache in the same park. Okay. Thank you, Stephen. okay, well, we'll start with the first one. Yes, I was personally escorted out of the state of Wisconsin by police officers. Yes, I was. But I was not geocaching. I was in high school. And what happened was that we went up to Wisconsin for our senior ski trip, and I had just turned 18 the day before. Okay. In Wisconsin, it was legal to rent a hotel room when you were 18. So I was the one who had to rent a hotel room for me and my buddies. So we got kicked out of 3 hotels in 2 nights, okay, because we were shit-faced and rowdy and being crazy. And finally, at the last hotel, the police came because we were rowdy, and they literally personally escorted us out of the state of Wisconsin. Funny fact of this story is that Sunday, which is when we got driven out, was Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, jeez. Okay?
And we were trying to make it to get home to Chicago to watch the Super Bowl. Well, what Taz is thinking? What are you thinking, Taz?
Trying to think who was playing in 88. 89. Okay, 89 in the Super Bowl.
I can't remember. Maybe the Broncos, I think.
And where was that?
I don't know. We're trying. We have to go 55 because we have a cop literally escorting us out of the state. So once we got Illinois, boom, we hit the gas and we're going 95, 98 miles an hour trying to get home. We get pulled over. We get pulled into the station where they're at like 8 o'clock at night.
Oh,
I had to bail my buddy out of jail.
Jeez,
that's the story of getting personally escorted. And oh wait, but the fun fact of this story is I was banned for life from ever running a hotel room in La Crosse, Wisconsin. That's been 30 years. So Jesse's like, we got to go back.
I was going to say, you got to see what happens.
Will I really get flagged?
That's funny as heck.
Sorry, Mr. Burks, we can't do it.
I'm sorry, we can't help you, sir.
Yep, banned for life.
Wow.
The second story is the most infamous story of my legend, is the when I was driving on the bike path. Me and a friend at the time were in Wisconsin. We're going to get some it was really, really, really cold day. It was about, you know, 10 degrees. It was winter. And we're going on a bike path. We drove to a bike path to walk down it. And we get out of the car, and the first one's like 100, you know, feet away. And as we're walking, we're like, it's really cold. It's colder than I thought it was. And then I'm like, you know, this bike path is pretty big. It's got a lot of width to it. You know where bike packs are, bike packs?
Yeah, I love bike
packs. Like, big, real wide bike path.
Yeah.
They're like, you think we can fit a car on this bike path? I think I can get a car on this bike path. So we ran back to the car. You know, it's wintertime. Nobody's running. Well, it turns out we saw three runners driving by us looking at us. Like, we put our hands out of the car and get the cash from the tree while we were still in the car, sitting in the car. What happened was somebody called the cops.
Oh, wow.
So when we saw up ahead of us a cop, okay, like looking for us. So we quickly hightailed it off the trail.
Uh-huh.
And we went and had lunch. And then we were stupid and said, all right, they're gone. Let's go back on the trail. So we get back on the trail to finish it off. And there was one cache, not part of the series, about 250 feet into the woods. My buddy's like, I'm going to go get it. Stay in the car. I'm going to go get it. I'm like, all right, fine. So I'm sitting in the car. He's off. And all of a sudden, it was like the end of like vacation, you know, where they all swarm. These cops just came literally out of nowhere. Right on top of my car. And I'm like, oh. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just geocaching. They're like, you can't be on this road. I'm like, you can't be on this path. I'm like, this isn't a road. No, it looks like there's no sign that says I can't drive on this. Totally playing a stupid car.
And, playing dumb works occasionally.
Yeah. So I had to call my buddy. No, I didn't call. I texted my buddy. I'm like, get back here. He's like, I'm almost done. I'm like, no. Now. So, yeah. So they kicked us out.
Wow.
So, yeah. They didn't ticket me. They didn't have a ticket for what I was doing. There's no law against driving on the...
There probably is now, but yeah.
No, it was. He's like, I don't even know what to write you up for. So get out of here.
Scott Burks, do not drive on a bike path.
Bike path, yes.
That's when I learned. I've done it many times since then, but that was the first time I ever did it.
Yeah. I would say that would be a not common thing for geocachers, but I'm pretty sure Colin French mentioned taking his car on a couple of trails as well.
It's the best. I almost literally got my Mini Cooper stuck. I was by myself on a bike trail, and I got stuck in snow and ice.
Oh, no.
I'm by myself.
Yeah.
30 minutes of rocking my car back and forth. What am I going to do? Get a tow truck? Tow truck's not going to come tow me out of there.
No. Wow. Well, there you go. Yeah,
so that's the story there, Stephen.
Yep, that'll be part of the Scott Burge legend. That goes into geocaching history.
That was in 2010. When I go old school, man, that was
wow.
Amazingly, yeah.
Yeah. That's my story. Excellent stuff. Well, good stuff, and thank you, Stephen, for writing in about that. And if you find folks have other questions that you want to ask that any of us have done as far as geocaching, write into gcpcmailbag@gmail.com, and we'll be glad to put it on the show just like that one. Good stuff. All right, Chad, you all set? This was pretty easy. Yeah, it's a self-promotion for Joshua. Yeah, but let's hit this. Here it is. The news.
So it looks like Joshua Johnson, the IKA the geocaching blogger, made it in the Star Tribune, which is a newspaper in the Minnesota area.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's Minneapolis. I'm not sure exactly, but I don't get it personally. So they don't ship it down to me, unfortunately. So Joshua Johnson acknowledges our problem. Joshua, get back to the beginning. So the title's Minnesotan builds a rabid following in the geocaching world.
That means so foaming at the mouth, or
that sounds like a lynch mob.
Everyone up there is rabid.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, in the picture that he's in is actually in Seattle. It's at the troll cache. Yeah, under the bridge. So I recognize that location.
Look at you knowing where he is. Look at you.
Chad's been everywhere. Chad. You know, you make it to Brazil, you pretty much know everything.
Exactly. So, except for New Zealand. I haven't been to New Zealand yet. I got to make it down there. Joshua Johnson celebrity grows in pursuit of hidden caches. So, Joshua acknowledges he didn't grow up in an outdoorsy family. His parents work weekends, and the activities such as camping and hiking simply weren't part of the program. Joshua, who's 40 years old now, said he spent more time staring at the screens of his Atari and Nintendo than he did roaming the woods or wading through waters of nearby lakes. But in addition to the video games, he was also a fan of a popular film about a bunch of kids who encountered all sorts of obstacles that, in search of hidden treasures. You know what it is if you lived in the 80s. Yeah. Oh, the Goonies.
Goonies, yeah.
You lived in the
80s. Yeah.
So,
The only thing, I'm taking out of this article is that Josh was 40.
Yes, I know it. It's but like,
it kind of gives the background, though, that, you know, he really wasn't an outdoorsy kid, but like the Goonies, like the idea of treasure hunting.
He liked pulling coins out of fountains for money.
And, you know, he kind of heard about geocaching and, you know, was like, well, this is a cool idea. And, you know, started doing it for a while. And then after a few years, he started making the videos and gathered a pretty healthy cult following, probably the biggest following on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely. Geocaching. Absolutely.
You know, his videos have been viewed over 7 million times. So,
yeah.
You know, that's pretty healthy.
I have to admit.
That's a few more than ours.
Yeah, I have to admit. He, even back in my days when I was doing videos and, well, he started getting onto the scene. Joshua is just, he's an entertainer. He is. He just has his own style when it comes to it. He's got energy that I don't. The man's got to be on drugs. That there is no other explanation than some kind of super science drug that keeps his energy level going, because he is constantly. I've met up with him. He's a good friend. He's just go.
He's a great guy.
Joshua. I'm friends with Joshua. I talk to Joshua. I've had dinner with Joshua. Yep. And like. He's on all the
time. All the time. He does not shut down. We ate one time when I forget where we were at. I think it was one of the Mogas when, you know, I had to take him in, of course, for Minnesota and a guy from Michigan. First thing we hit was White Castle to gross out our wives and go there. We just had a riot, and he's just boom, 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 boom. He's a great guy, though. Man, he does. He loves his kids. He loves working with kids, and he just is. He's just one of those people that – he's just gonna go far, and he has. And
gotta be in front of the camera.
Yep, so. Gotta be in front of the camera. Gotta go. So, it's awesome. It is awesome. So, congrats, Josh, for all of that. That's amazing. And if you want to read the article, we will have that in our show notes. Just go to geocachingpodcast.com tonight after we publish, and you can read up all the things about Joshua, the geocaching vlogger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A free plug for Joshua.
Yeah, you know, I saw that. And you know, the kicker is, in the older days, you would see newspapers. I mean, Scott and I have both been in, like, the New York Times and other things. Wall Street Journal. And just different newspapers. And it used to be happening quite a bit. So it does not seem to happen as much anymore. So when one of the celebs hits the things, it's always good to give a good push. For them.
We've got a couple of vloggers down our side of the planet. There's See My Shells and Ozzy, who's helping organize the Ozzy Geomuster at Easter. And he puts a few out. And Mr. Cuddly Brick has put the odd one out as well.
Very nice.
Mr. Cuddly Brick?
Yeah, Mr. Cuddly Brick's Geocaching Adventures.
And that's with a B. So that's
with a B. Oh,
Anyway. But I've
couldn't help myself.
I've got two bits of news that aren't on the obviously geocaching relevant, but they are. Now the first one is the Department of Conservation that manages our sort of parks estate is taking away a shelter called Dome Shed, which on the slopes of Mount Rupehu, which is the highest mountain in the North Island. Now this shelter's old, past its best, and so they're taking it away. But the reason it's geocaching relevant is it was a location for New Zealand's highest geocache, which was called Santa's Surprise, because it was hidden around the chimney. But so with the hut gone, the cache is currently disabled, and I have a feeling it might well be archived, given there's no hut to put it in. But that's wait and see. So, and the other one is sort of wider. There's a disease called kauri dieback. Kauri is a big, huge tree, sort of probably our equivalent of giant redwoods. A disease called kauri dieback that's affecting them. And to try and limit the spread of that, the local iwi, local tribes, have put a rahui or ban on access to the areas with kauri. And Auckland City Council has just reinforced and ratified, and they're going to ratify that ban. I think it's from May that comes in, but that limits access to quite a large area of the forests north of Auckland. So,
and they're saying no access. Then there's nobody can get in there.
Depends quite where it is. It's not my area of New Zealand, so I haven't followed it in huge detail. But it is closing off quite large areas, and some of the owners have. Some of the more historic caches have disabled their caches, or in some cases got permission to go in and remove them just so that there's no temptation for anybody else to go and find them.
Yeah. And you know,
so we'll just have to wait and see on that one.
When it comes to a situation like that, where something as serious as that is involved, I had no problem with that. I mean, protect the trees. I mean, we can find geocaches to go someplace else. In a case like that, where, and you get that in a lot of state parks here in the States, same thing. There's areas that they'd love to have you have geocaches, but there's other ones they just don't want people tramping through it. Sensitive areas, I guess, is the way you want to put it. And so
it's going to happen. You can't help it.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
Yep.
I mean, it's a sort of, and the roots of a kauri tree and also the boardwalk to get to one is the ideal place to hide a cache, but you don't want to encourage people going there when you don't need to.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're my two little snippets from New Zealand.
Excellent. All right. You know, protect it the best you can. I mean, we don't have the right to come in and just smash things up. And unfortunately, not all geocachers are as sympathetic to the areas of which they patrol. So, you know, if they got to do some measures to protect stuff like that, go for it. All right, let's move on. We got the GCPC episode 526. Last week we did tools of the trade. This week we're going through geocaching tricks of the trade. And the kind of the idea was for this is to not necessarily go over just certain, you know, tools or things that you use to find a geocache, but just different things to make geocaching easier for you. And I thought this would be a good thing. Scott actually brought up the suggestion for it, so thank you, Scott. And I'm just going to open up with the first one, and then we can just go gangbusters on anyone. We've got a whole list here of things to talk over. One of the things people go, well, why do you want to pay $30 a year to be a premium member for geocaching? And the pay for the admission ticket is pocket queries. That makes it worth every penny, as far as I'm concerned, for what it is that you do for a geocacher. And if you don't use them, you are not utilizing things like you should when it comes to geocaching. Pocket queries are the absolute best way, especially if you're going areas out of your normal scope of things, to choose what geocaches you want to go through and pick out. And I'll add to the pocket queries using something like GSAC, if you can, or a tool like GSAC. To store all this stuff and to query it and sort the way that you want for those.
And gather multiple pocket queries into one one great database.
Yeah.
You can build multiple databases within GSAC itself. So when I build pocket queries for an area, I start in a central location and do a certain radius that I consider good. And then I do it kind of in date ranges in there. So one of the options you have to do is in date ranges. And then I start building up maybe 7 to 10 pocket queries of those date ranges, because you're limited to only 1,000 caches per pocket query. And so you keep it under that 1,000. You can build up multiple of those, get them all downloaded, and then put those into GSAC, and you have every single cache within that radius.
Yeah, because you can overlap it and you wouldn't even know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I find them really useful for if I'm working on a challenge, just trying to see, right, I'm here, what, running a query to find what caches are that will fit whatever challenge I'm working on that I have.
Yep.
And that spits those up.
Yeah. I mean, Jesse, just, I think last night or night before last, we're sitting on the couch and I look over at Jesse on the laptop. She's running a pocket query. She's going to Minnesota next month.
Yep.
She's running a pocket query of where we're going to be and, you know, what's around there. And I think high favorite points is what high favorites and virtuals and stuff like that. And
yeah. One of the things
last night or night before.
Yeah. With GSAC, one of the things that I love is you can remove anything that's archived, which you can do with a pocket query anyways, but, it removes all the archived ones that you have record to. You can just take them out of the query just by eliminating them with a click. But also a lot of them where if the geocache hasn't been found in how many tries out of the past four were successful or unsuccessful, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you can really have a better odd, especially if you're going in an area that you've never been before. You want to hit the ones with the best chance of finding them and not getting DNFs. And that's a great way for setting that up as well.
Yeah.
Let's see. The other one, too, that kind of goes with that, and then we'll jump to Project GC, caching by route is awesome. That's one of the things. Now I like using it. Unfortunately, one of the things that happens to me the most times is I will use that. And caching by route means you literally say I'm starting from this point going to this point, and then every geocache within anything from half a mile to any amount of distance out will show up in that route as it plans it from point A to point B. The problem with that is most cases I never follow the route that I originally was going to plan. I'm off going here. Oh, wait, this is over here. And then I'm never on the same route. So
yeah, I've been all of a sudden, hang on, there's no caches around me. Why aren't there any caches around me? I've been working in offline mode and it's yeah. like, oh, I want a different route than my caching my route method.
Yep. Took me. Yep. It happens, and thank goodness nowadays you're able to still find geocaches easier. But one of the things that would drive you nuts on my auto GPS is that every time you got within a certain short distance of a cache, it would ding. So if you're on an 800-mile trip, that's a lot of dings.
Yeah, my buddy Walt had IBC be in his car, and I hear his ding, ding, ding.
And then it's, why aren't we going for it? Ding. Because one of
or it's like, not another bloody cache. Why do you stop? Yeah. It depends whether you've got the muggles in the car or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's when a 12-hour ride turns into an 18-hour ride because of all those times you stop.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it's already making a stop a couple times on the way to Minnesota. It's right off the road. Right off the road.
Yeah. How about Project GC? That's another one that's really got so many different advantages when it comes to just about anything you want to know about, any kind of stats or any kind of things that deal with anything with geocaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She swears by it. She's actually a paid member for that.
Mm-hmm. I just got to notice to renew mine.
Yeah, I don't, but she uses it all. But she's the one who does all the route planning and all that. Oh, yeah.
I'm considering going back to being a paid member. So. It's like one of those ones where it's like, yeah, it's great when you use it, and then you don't use it for a while. It's like, why am I still paying for this?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I find
she got
it.
She got like the free. She got free for like 3 months or something like that, and that they sucked her in, and now she's like, I have to pay for this. I can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, free's quite. I think even on the free one, you can. It's really useful if you're going to go somewhere you're not normally. Say for you guys, a different state or a different area. Or, you can look, and I find one of the first things I do is see: are there any DT ones I haven't got, or are there any unfound dates I've not got, or even hidden dates, and that's quite. It pops up with the ones that are the gaps that you have, which is really useful for just thinking: is it worth heading out that way? Because there's that one which will fill my Jasma grid if I can get it. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And the really useful thing for me is map compare on it.
And describe it. Describe that.
You got another cacher with you.
Yeah. It color code, and you pick an area, and it color codes who's whether neither of you have found it, or which of you, one of you has found it, or both of you, and you can add more people. And that's just really useful for working out what sort of areas. Are you going to target in an afternoon or a day to get the most benefit for everybody there?
Yeah, because a lot of times geocachers go with a carload of them and away you go.
Oh, yeah.
Neat stuff. So some of the stuff that we also thought would be interesting to talk about, that if you haven't had this set up, I don't know how you can survive being a geocacher. But first, define preparedness. One of the first things that I remember setting up when I first got into geocaching was I had like three different kind of notifications. I would get emails, I'd get text, I'd get, you know, other things. So what that means is for anything that you could do for a pocket query, you can set that up, and you can set it up for when a geocache is first published. And when that goes, you go ding, and you look at it, and you don't care that it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Somehow you got to come up with a quick excuse to go for that geocache that's 3.5 miles around, because you want to be a first to find hound. And they still have it. It's pretty much the same thing. You can set up text. You can set up the email.
For 10 years I've been doing this.
Yep. Heck, we've had it during the show.
What?
We've had it during the show.
I've left the show to go to it.
Yep. It's like, yep. It's like,
what's
sorry.
What's funny is, about 8 years ago, you know, I'm back to where I was living. I'm talking about the same neighborhood,
the
same area. And when I was out in Elgin, you know, 35 miles away, they rarely came out. And if they did, I pretty much got them because not that many cached out there. But now here, it's in 2008 or 2010 here, I could literally... My email could go off. I could have dinner and relax a little bit and still get it. Now, if the key now here, I tell Jesse this all the time. I was like, if it comes in, if you don't leave right now, if you hesitate, forget it. You're gone. You missed it. You have to literally leave right now.
Yeah.
Go right now. You know, you have to grab your keys and run out the door.
The only ones I have a chance at getting is if a puzzle happens to pop in my area of town, because if it's a traditional, forget it. GBs or, you know, one of the cachers around here, they're like they're on it so quick. It's like, I can't do that.
Yeah, we had it pretty heavy here for quite a few years. I think it's kind of slowed down a bit, but yeah, it's one of those things where you would. If you did it right, you would wave goodbye as you saw the other two ones that are trying for it as you've already leaving and go that way. That's a lot of fun. There's many a time that I have met up pitch black outside, you know, 5:30 in the morning, three people out there from different directions coming with flashlights. And just meeting up. And a lot of times I've had most of my co-FTFs in those situations.
Sure. It's called an FTF party.
That's
The
flash mob.
Yeah, kind of.
You chat for half an hour and then you go home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, so you got to have that set up. Make sure you you go on, and if you don't have it set up, set it up.
When you go to an event, make sure your phone's on. I see people sneaking away from events all the time. Where the hell are they going? I look at my phone. I'm like,
first to find. Yeah, that's too much. It really is. Good stuff. some forethought into, and actually that's one of the points to this, hiding a geocache the right way. If you were going to go and tell somebody that's never hidden a geocache before, what's the right way to go out and actually hide a geocache? Because most people...
drive down the road, throw it on your window.
And throw it out the side. I've actually seen YouTubes of people doing that, and it's like, oh my God.
I would tell them, stop hiding and start finding.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not helping anybody.
Yeah, you're not doing him any favors.
No.
Nope. Learn how to find first, then learn how to hide.
Learn how inaccurate your GPS is when you first start it. Learn how to, you know, use some basic tool apps like a GPS averaging tool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but also, you know, get burnout on LPCs, you know.
So you don't put any out.
Hide a woodsy hide is what I tell them. Don't hide. Don't hide an LPC in the woods, and don't put a freaking micro.
Hide a micro in the woods for Scott.
Yes, because he loves those.
If I ever move to Chicago, I'm going to put out a series of a micro in the woods for Scott.
That'd be insane.
Oh. I was going to say, go out if you can. Team up with an experienced cacher for even just an afternoon. Go around with them. You'll find out far. You'll learn far more about spotting them, hiding them, what makes a good hide, what doesn't, and then you'll have a really good idea of things to look for.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said in the beginning of this, forethought is a good concept. If you sit there and go, this is a great place to hide a geocache. This is something that is not going to easily get muggled. This is something that I may have to do some camouflaging to put it in correctly so people don't find it unexpectedly and have problems with that. You know, I might want to put a little forethought and effort into actually creating the hide instead of just putting a bison tube. Like Scott said, put something good out in the woods. Nothing brings a bigger smile to my face than to walk out in the middle of God's country and find some creative hide where somebody took the time to, you know, make a gnome home or, you know, some...
But that can be a freaking ammo can. For the...
Yeah.
If you're going to make me walk a mile in the woods, give me a goddamn ammo
can. Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's just one...
This is one of the reasons, again... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's right. Go ahead.
Oh, where like, I'm a firm believer in the Padawan-mentor, you know, relationship between... with geocaching. You know, I had mine was I See It, and Jesse was mine, Cody Dog was mine, you know, and I See It taught me so much about, and it's funny because I asked Jesse, I'm like, what did I teach you when you first started? Like, tell me what I taught you, because I could write this down here for like,
yeah,
and some of it is here. And but like, you know, Ivan taught me a crap ton, you know, how to spot poison ivy, how to find a trail in the woods,
yes,
you know, all this stuff, how to do. And one of the things, what's great about is there's a lot of places here in Chicago, we call them dead zones, where it's like a cache just cannot stay there. It just get. I found four caches in the same spot, you know.
Yeah.
So it's good to know, like, hey, if you see a great spot, you might want to ask a cacher who's been around a while, like, has there ever been a cache here before? Like, why is there no cache here?
Yeah.
You know, and they might be like, oh, it's a total dead zone.
Yeah.
You know, like, caches don't stay there. They just, you know, for some reason.
Get there within 2 weeks or it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple like that, a couple of locations like that around us that you see them pop up and you find them. But yeah, I agree with you. There are a couple of people that I went caching with, and I've learned truckloads from them. I'm not going to mention names because I generally try not to, but they know who they are, and thank you. And if there's anybody going to the Aussie Geomuster that fancies teaming up with a Kiwi and showing them where the nasty snakes are so I don't have to be there, and all the venomous spiders and everything else that's lurking there waiting to kill me, I'd quite happily team up and get back out alive.
That's just getting off the plane. So
that's dinner.
That's
dinner,
yeah, so yeah. Yeah, that's like I said, you know, I think they still haven't found signal yet. It's just, he got off in Australia and gone.
They mistook him for a cane toad and ran him over.
Crack ate him on
the crack ate him on the way.
Talking of which, has anybody any idea what that email that popped up from Groundspeak, if it's only X days, X hours, and X seconds sort of something happened?
Jesse and I were just talking about that over dinner. She's like, did you see that email we got? I'm like, I don't care. I'm not going to speculate. It's something. Our guess is Mary Hyde, kind of a Mary Hyde, some friend thing.
Mid-March sort of thing, isn't it?
That's my guess.
Yeah, we'll have to see when it comes. You know,
what could it possibly be?
More if I got filtered.
Hmm?
I'm wondering if that got filtered. I don't see it.
If it's another,
it wasn't today. It was like yesterday.
I think it was. Yeah, it's another way for them to test their algorithm. So it's
maybe they only send it to a certain number of people.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah,
I'm not special enough.
Sorry.
I don't think I got it. Jesse, I heard about it from Joshua, I think, and then Jesse got it. I don't even think I got it.
I got one, I thought. I just, like, I was like Scott, I was doing something else and just kind of flew over it. So, yeah. But anyways, yeah, we'll have to see. Interesting stuff. Back on track with this. Other things to go through. Yeah, I think the mentoring thing is absolutely something that's important for teaching other people. Because I remember when I first started going out geocaching, I had no point of reference. I had no idea the different ways that somebody a geocache could be hidden or hid. And I thought, okay, well, this one was in a tree. Why? What do you mean this one's in this sewer-covered thing? I mean, you know, it's good to show a variety so people get a good idea of what it is before you actually start.
Oh my God, yeah. I learned so much from my buddies. We're still friends today.
Yep.
Yeah, he taught me so much about this game. You know?
Oh, absolutely!
Oh, yeah, go to local events, find some people. You know, you'll find someone that will take you under wing. And that, you know, that's exactly the process that I went through. Actually, you know, first was, you know, I sent an email to a puzzle cache owner. Imagine that. You know, asking him about a specific thing, and he actually suggested that I join an event, and I was probably 15-20 puzzles or 15-20 caches in at the time, so I was like, okay, I'll go to one. And then at cache number 50 was my first event. So
yep, best way to go. Good way of meeting people. A lot of networking when it comes to stuff like that. And you will be surprised how many different varieties of folks. You've got CEOs to Joe the plumber to you name it.
I said it's the only time you'll see like a brain doctor and a garbage man talking to each other and laughing with each other.
Yep.
And having anything in common with
each other. It's awesome. It really is.
Yeah. And the funny part, I've literally seen that happen.
Yeah.
I know a brain doctor and I know a garbage man and I saw them talking a lot.
For crying out loud, I know an astronaut and an astrophysicist that I constantly discuss things with, and it's a riot because otherwise I never would have met these people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. One of the things that I put down here was find your geocaching niche, which means what is your favorite thing you like to go out for geocaching? And then do the exact opposite. Try something else. And the beauty
you want me to go look for LPCs?
Yeah.
I want you to do multis.
You and Sonny.
Multis, okay.
Yeah. That's it. But it's amazing. You have such a variety that you can do with geocaching. I mean, literally, there's just about everything you can think about when it comes to outdoor activities with geocaching. And there's stuff you're going to just love to do. But if you start getting the slightest bit of the, I don't know if I want to do that today, try one of the other ones. You know, one of the best experiences or some of the best experiences I've had are the ones that I do the least, and that's like earth caches, things like that. And I just go out and see this stuff and had no idea it was even there, let alone the different things that are involved with it. So there's just a billion different things that you can do with it.
Yeah, I definitely.
I just don't like the homework afterwards.
I definitely try to get a variety in, including multis, even though multis are probably my least favorite.
Yep. Multis are the best. Yeah, see, everybody's got their own thing. It's one of those things. Yeah.
Well, the problem with multis is that I will inevitably get to a stage and the stage is missing.
Yeah.
You know,
they're not flawless.
And it drives me batty.
That's because people don't hunt them. If people hunted them,
It's just that the states don't do it. But if you go to Ireland and some Germany and some of these other countries, they live them. That's all they do.
Damn, it's all like multis.
I love multis, but they're not sort of muggle family friendly. So they can. You can sort of understand. Hey, you want to look at that memorial and count how many people called Jones are on it?
Uh huh.
Okay, we'll have a cup of coffee while you do that. We'll tolerate that. What do you mean you want us to drive another half mile in a completely the opposite direction?
It's not family friendly.
Right. So I'm slowly building up a list of multis where I've got one or where I've solved them. I just haven't gone and got them, so they're there whenever I come back.
Right.
But that could be 2 years down the line, by which time it's probably been archived.
They'll be there. No,
and I have solved a number of them with Google Street View.
Oh, really? Nice.
There's a way to do it. So that's for all the signs that people need to go to read for stuff like that. It's a trick.
Those, you know, the monuments and stuff like that, those don't move.
So yeah.
Yeah, if you can get pictures on the internet and Google Street View, I mean, a lot of those can be solved.
Some folks are a little more ingenious than others when it comes to problem solving. I have to admit, though, a lot of times with multis, as long as if they're going to tell me that there's a long distance, then I can prepare that there's a long distance that's going to be involved with it. I love that they have it right in the description. It's the anticipation of getting, if it's like a two or a three stage or even a four stage, something like that, it's the anticipation. What's going to be the next thing? What's going to go on? Because there have been some really creative ones.
Oh, I found phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed the ones that I've successfully done.
Yeah. Or you just do like Scott and just force your way through and figure it out.
It drives
anyways.
Me insane when I see puzzles that are multis, and I'm like, no, this is a multi. It's not a puzzle. It's not a puzzle.
Yeah, it's a great idea. My pet nemesis are Werigos. I love them in theory. I think they're really great. They're really creative. But why on earth does my phone always crap out on them?
You can't do it on a phone. You got to do it on a Garmin or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I've had great luck in recent years using the Where You Go app on Android. Thank you very much.
I forgot you're one of those iBrick people.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's with a B, Scott.
In the early days, I would have them crashing all the time. I would say in the past 2-3 years, I haven't had it crash once.
Huh.
Really? So,
that's good.
I was once out with six people. We were doing a where ago. We were down to one person with it still working.
Oh, wow. I
mean, that's the way you used to do it. Basically, everyone got their units out, and they started going. And, you know, hopefully one of you still was working at the end.
Hopefully, you mean one of you had the functioning equipment.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's another trick for where I goes. That's a good thing.
Everybody has to download it and open it.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, but the other thing too, go try stuff that you haven't done in a while. Good stuff. Mentoring stuff, hard to see hides. Use your phone camera as a mirror. I just have mirrors. I that helps out a lot. But I have occasionally reached up to an area that was questionable and go out and
I put my phone first all the time.
Take a picture.
Absolutely.
I never had anything looking back when I did that, but I always expected it.
I've had sort of that once. Nothing as nasty as you guys would encounter, but went out, found it's final for a challenge case. It was a big stump that was hollow in the middle. And I went and I looked down and I couldn't see this thing. And then I looked right down at the bottom and I saw a mouse. I thought, oh, cool! It's in a plastic mouse. It's no, it's going to be a bitch to reach. And then it ran away.
Like, oh, that wasn't a plastic one.
I'll tell you this one real quick. Go ahead,
Scott. I was looking at a tree knot and went nose to nose with a mouse once. I looked and we're there. We're like looking right at each other, dead stare.
Yeah. I was underneath a bridge here in North Carolina, and same kind of thing. I looked down, and you know the big plastic spiders that are about yay big, and it's the interesting colors. This one actually had underneath the abdomen about the size of about a half ounce lead sinker, literally underneath it. I'm like, that has got to be it because it's got a lead sinker to keep it in place. I got my camera, took a picture of it. Unfortunately, it turned out blurry. Then it moved. This is like small tarantula size. And I'm like,
halfway back to the car.
Oh my God. But yeah, the only other one that I found interesting was Maine Gray, which is one of the geocachers here in North Carolina. He was in a crouched position, and his junk was nose to nose with a copperhead. And they actually managed to get a picture of this.
Oh my God.
And he just kind of slowly backed up.
I literally would have been crying.
Oh yeah, I would have fell back and just wanted to die. But yeah, that's some things you just don't want to deal with.
Yeah, so one time out there caching in Palmettos, and this is one of the reason I say, you know, definitely Palmettos. That's one thing in the South. You want to use a stick or something, lift it. Yes. I had my hiking pole, lifted it up. Copper mouth coiled up there, ready to strike. Uh-huh. It's like gently let it slide back down, backed away. It's like, we're skipping this one today.
Yeah, you got to be careful, man. Poke it with a stick. Yeah. Yep, but so yeah, there's definitely close counters that you need to be aware of when you're out geocaching. This has got to be Scott that put this in.
This is me. Yeah.
Go for it, Scott.
Different kind of this is. I actually recently heard about this. You know, like a bush hide. You know, like a regular thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
Another one. You could use. I like to use a flashlight to illuminate, to try and illuminate
the
bush. But the other thing you do, and I've heard people doing this, use a metal detector.
I know several geocachers that do that. We've got brambles.
That's in their car. A tot in their car is a metal detector.
Yep.
I prefer some charcoal lighter fluid starter. And no, you can't do that.
Flamethrower is much more effective.
I have wanted to. Bush hides are evil.
Yes.
I had one. It was called Greenwood Park. It was years and years ago when I first started. I must have been back there six goddamn times.
Yep.
I could not find it. I mean, literally, I would dive in to the bushes. Like, it was a big, big bushes. And I just couldn't come up with it.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Oh, you can go back several times, and then you know, the last time you go back, and it's like,
right there,
practically smacking you in the face, like, I am so obvious.
Waving at you.
And it's worse, you're logging in at DNF, and a day later somebody finds it. You're like,
oh, yeah.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yes. Yes.
It is not
and
there.
It's a person, and it's a person with about six finds.
Yes.
Quick, easy find.
Or like the owner puts a note, yep, it's there.
Oh, jeez. The other thing that you want to consider if you're looking for a bison tube is shake the tree. Shake the tree, because that
get the glint of a light off hitting it just right, or the movement, because it doesn't move the same way as the leaves and limbs.
That's why I like to use a flashlight. I use a flashlight a lot. I stick my head in there, get a flashlight in there with me.
And
I had that in an absolute FU hide a couple of months back, and the way it was set up and described, there was a park bench and on a concrete sort of base, and we're looking around under the park bench, seeing is there a little bit of a lip under the concrete, this damn thing could possibly be hidden at. And eventually we resorted to phone a friend on it, and the damn thing was high. There was a tree about 10 feet from this bench, so within the coordinates, and it was a bison tube hung up in the tree.
Oh yeah.
And you only saw it by sort of almost lying under it and looking up.
One of the best FU hides that we have out here that we love doing is because we're in pine tree country. So what you do is you get a 13, 14 foot sapling that you can bend. You can literally bend over and put it over and then tie it to the top of it and have it go up that way. Yeah.
There was, I remember finding one in Houston that way, and it was in the hint it was this geocacher's name type of hide, and it's like, I don't know this geocacher. I'm about 60 miles north of my normal caching location,
right,
in the north end of Houston. And so I phoned a friend, and it's like, what does this mean? It's like, oh, it means on the top of the tree, you know, that you got to bend over. And at the point, I'm down in the creek standing in sand, and all of a sudden, the fire ants did their synchronous and I had about 20 fire ants biting me. It's like, gotta go, Donna.
Oh, geez.
Fire ants are biting me.
Jeez. Yeah, you get South Carolina, Georgia, I'll tell you what, man, you don't Amy did a boogie shuffle one time when we were on way going to an event, and yeah, you don't want to mess with fire ants.
I don't miss fire ants.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Okay.
Rock hides.
Yes.
Like in a whole slew of rocks. Again, I like to use a flashlight to illuminate the cache.
Yep.
As many times I never would have found it if I didn't have my flashlight with me.
So are you actually getting it on the cache itself, or you got a fake rock?
No, getting on the cache is hidden in rocks.
Oh, hidden in rocks. Oh, yeah.
Hidden in rocks. Okay. Yeah, so here in California, a rock cache, they quite literally usually taken a, you know, 10-pound river rock, took it home, drilled it out.
Yep, I've got one here.
And glued in one and put it in there. So, and it's in the field of river rocks. I found probably 20 of those types of finds out here in California. It's like, are you kidding me? I gotta turn over how many of these damn things to find it?
Yeah. Here, we get them, but we're a little more gracious to the geocaching hunter. A lot of times you'll be in a rock pile or something like that, and it's usually the rock that's covering like a little cave, and you can kind of see that there's just enough of a difference that you can go with that, or the rock itself is a little bit different. But yeah, you get a couple quite of those FU ones too.
Yeah. We get people who've gone off some, probably to Lake Taupo, and picked up pumice stone.
Uh-huh.
Pick up huge bits of that and chip out a hiding place for a cache, and then put that in a rock field.
Yeah.
So it's
we have words for geocachers like that do that,
Yeah, we got it where it's here. It's, you know, when you go to like Lake Michigan or either most of the smaller lakes around here, you've got rock piles, you know, surrounding the lake, you know, except for the beaches.
Yep.
Like, you know, where it's huge rock piles, and you know, people just jam caches in there.
Yep.
You know, and it's dark. It's really hard to see them because it's dark. So flashlight totally just gives it away. It's really easy to spot.
Yeah, you got to be careful here in North Carolina with rock hides because you got slim no shoulders that just love rocks as well because they generate heat, and snakes love hiding and stuff like that. So you really got to be careful when you're doing stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
All right, good stuff. Excellent. Guys got anything else?
The old infamous pine tree hide.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I'm going to give you my tricks to the pine tree.
Go for it.
One thing that somebody taught me that totally worked, this is going to sound really, really weird, but to look through the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look for the cache. Look through the tree. This guy, he's like, and he was so funny because I'm looking for it. And he's sitting there going, look through the tree.
Thank you, Grasshopper.
And you know what? There it was. I'm like, oh my God, there it is. He's like, yeah. You have to look at it like,
you're not focused on something,
right?
Yeah, at the paintings, like, you know, those paintings, how you see the picture within the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it like that. Look through the tree.
Magic eye.
Yeah, totally works too. Another way, if I still can't find it, I will literally get on my back, scoot under the tree, and look up.
Mm-hmm.
That's always indicative too. I usually find it that way as well.
Yep.
By doing that, totally works. But if you can't do that at night, so at night, again, flashlight. Look for the zip tie. Usually, if it's zip tied.
Those also work for pine cone type hides as well, because what gives it away is usually the thread or the zip tie or whatever they're using strapping it to the branch.
And the other thing to do, and it's going to sound so dumb and so basic, is if in doubt, step back, sit down and just sit down, and especially if it's an older cache, sit down and read through all the logs. Reread the logs.
Oh, absolutely.
In there just jogs memory. I had that for one this weekend, and it was absolute pig of a... The hint was something like near a small dead tree, and there was one obvious one, and it wasn't there. But it was sort of climb up a bank that was taller than me, go along through some bush. No, it's not. Wasn't there. Couldn't find the damn thing. Came down an even more steep bit of the earth bank. Much to the laughter of a couple of muggles that were coming along the path. And then I explained geocaching. I said, "Oh, one of my friends does that. They're mad." I said, "Goes with the territory." And then I sat down and I looked at, and I reread about 30 logs on it, and something just clicked. And once I'd spotted something that somebody else mentioned, I finally managed to find the thing, but it took me about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Or you find the 3 or 4 posts that says the coordinates were off by 30 feet to the south.
I love that. Da, 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 da,
da. It's like, okay, so here, over there. Okay, there it is.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, read the logs, definitely.
When in doubt, read the logs. Yep. Absolutely when in doubt, read the logs.
Good stuff. Absolutely. All right. Good stuff. And if you've got different types of suggestions for your tricks of the trade, by all means, send it in to go to our website at geocachingpodcast.com and send it in to us, and we'll put it into our next version that we have down the road. Okay. I want to say thank you to Chad and Sarah and Scott for all the things that they do. And thank you, fine folks, for stopping on by. We greatly do appreciate it. Let's see. I think that's about it. Sarah, do you have anything else that you had?
Not really, no. I've picked up a couple of ideas out of this one, so thank you.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Let me end this. I want to give a plug real quick.
Yeah.
Most people know me, and a lot of people, Jesse, my girlfriend, Shortiness, she's a caching name. She started a geocaching blog, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. So if you want to follow her, just go to shortiness.com. That's shorty then KNITS.com. And she's got a geocaching blog there.
All right, we'll put it in the show notes. Good stuff.
Yeah, so go follow her.
Excellent. Yeah, the more information out there, the better. So good for her. Absolutely. Way to go.
She just did a whole whole post on winter caching.
Excellent.
Go read it.
Excellent. Good stuff. Be sure to check that out. All right, folks. Good stuff. Thank you for stopping on by. We greatly do appreciate it. And we will see you next week on the Geocaching Podcast. See you, folks. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and on many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. The show is copyright 2018 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.